Okay, we are live tonight.
Great, thank you. I'm going to go ahead and call to order the Hood River City Council meeting of November 23rd, 2020, 6 p.m. First of all, we will have, we're all on Zoom, so we are not going to need to stand, but we're going to go ahead and do the Pledge of Allegiance. Eric? Okay, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. I also wanted to acknowledge the land that we all live on and our community has been taken care of by numerous generations and other cultures prior to us being here. They did a great job taking care of it, and we need to take care of it now and in the future. Business from the audience is our first item this evening, and we did not have anyone that signed up or anyone that sent any comments in regarding any of our items tonight. So there is no one for business from the audience. So we'll go ahead and start our work session. And we actually don't have anything on our work session either this evening. So we'll go ahead and open the regular council meeting. Do we have any agenda additions or corrections?
Mayor, under organizational updates, we will be asking for a council member to volunteer to serve on planning commission interviews.
Okay. All right, great. So we have several things on the consent agenda. Does anyone have any questions or wants anything pulled off or any conflicts with anything on the consent agenda? Go ahead and raise your hand if you have anything. Mark?
I'd like to talk about the Second and Oak Street contract before we just watch it go by, so.
Okay, anyone else? I don't see any hands on anything else. So let's go ahead and talk about that. And then if we don't have any changes or we're all okay with it, we'll stick it back in and we'll do everything at once. So let's go ahead and talk about that one first before it goes through the consent agenda. Mark, why don't you go ahead if you've got something on it?
Yeah. So I was curious about how the new ODOT IGA impacts this. There's a whole bunch of, 47 different, 27? Let me get to it. Different responsibilities of the city and 27 versus ODOT and whether any of those things are impacted by us owning Oak now with the IGA. And then there's a reference to Mark Lago in here and just some other stuff. So, but the biggest thing is given that we own Oak now, does that fundamentally change our agreement with ODOT? So that's the question.
Mark and or Wade, do you want to jump in and answer that question?
Sure, I can try to answer that question.
We did catch the reference to Mark Lago. So we'll change the last, we will ask ODOT to change the last name there.
I'll try to answer the question, Councilman. I don't believe there's been really any change in what ODOT expected the city to be responsible for. I believe that the entire project from the beginning has been the expectation that the city will be paying for all the improvements. The cost sharing would be relative to ODOT and the city paying 50% each of the ongoing maintenance.
And is the $500,000 that's mentioned in here, is that what we've budgeted all along, or is that a new number, or I just can't remember that part.
Yeah, I think that's been a number that's been around for a while. I think that number will most likely go up almost assuredly. New four-way signal, and then the improvements to the concrete and the new poles or poles themselves are expensive. So I think $500,000 was an expectation maybe 2 years ago. And I think that most likely that cost is a little higher than it is now.
So this is for $24,000 for them to review final drawings? Is that the basic gist of it?
Yeah. Well, right now we have preliminary drawings in. So the request tonight relative to a monetary expenditure is $9,000 for the plans, and then in the future, $15,000 to review the signal itself after it gets installed. But the $9,000 would be now. I am going to be bringing before you another contract for final documents and bid documents from the same engineering company. So we're not over with this yet, but this is the preliminary review of the drawings.
Councillor, and Mark wasn't here, but the 50% cost share for the signal maintenance was part of the agreement with ODOT when we took Second and Oak over, and that was part of what came before you. Those are not anticipated to be large expenses. I can't remember, but I can find out the exact number as part of that IGA.
So I guess that answered my question. I was sort of expecting us to just be in charge of ourselves now, and that's obviously not completely true. So,
Councillor, you're correct. Unfortunately, not because of the proximity to the freeway.
Yeah, it's in the interchange area management plan area because of 84, the ramps on 84, and I think the signaling has to do. Mark, Janik, if you want to correct me if I'm wrong on this, but the signaling has to be coordinated with ODOT because they have to make sure things don't back up on those off ramps. And so, you know, and Highway 30 is a state highway, even though we own Oak Street now, or a portion of Oak Street. So I think, you know, we're still intertwined with ODOT, even though we have more jurisdictional control on some portions of Oak Street. Is that kind of the gist of it?
That's exactly correct. This light and the intersection on the bridge for 84, they both have to be completely together. That's correct.
All right. I'm good then, Kate. And I look forward to the next step on this one and getting the next schedule update.
Yeah, I think, go ahead, Megan.
Sorry, didn't need to interrupt you, Kate. I guess since we're talking about it, I'm wondering, I know we've had some significant back and forth with ODOT about getting this design to something that I think is better for the community with the curb bump outs and not getting rid of parking immediately and everything. Are we fairly confident that this design review is gonna be able to keep all of that? Or what is design review a risk that they're gonna change on us again, or?
I think that Councilwoman, I believe there's very little chance of that. I've talked with the reviewers at ODOT, talked with our consultant. I believe that we're at a place that the review should go relatively smoothly and relatively quickly.
Okay, awesome. Thanks, Mark.
Anyone else? Yeah, I think, you know, I just wanted to say that on these ODOT contracts, you know, we're intertwined with them, whether we like it or not. The prices keep going up for different things that we need to do with them. We sign these agreements and sometimes they last for years and years until we get something done. And we whine about it, we don't like it. And that's the nature of things. When we don't like things, we we protest. And Eric's trying to get more money on the committee with ODOT right now. But we know we're intertwined with them, and that's what we have to do if we want to get these projects going and we want to get them going. So that's where we are. Any other questions? Tim?
This is a question for Rachel. Rachel, does the League of Cities ever think about these relations between city governments and ODOT? Is that something that's ever come up?
Councillor, that's a great question. I don't know the answer to that, but I'd be happy to ask. I'd be happy to ask that question. I do know that we are not the only one who has challenges and also has some big infrastructure asks from ODOT. You think of all those communities up and down I-5, they've been in similar situations. So I'd be happy to ask.
That'd be great.
That is.
Because it almost seems like a conversation, not only between us, but other entities that could kind of use to be brokered somehow, or facilitated, or helped.
Sure, yeah, good idea, Councillor, thank you.
Well, there might be more leverage if we had, you know, a bigger mass than just one small city, so for sure. Anything else on the consent agenda? Could I get a Eric?
Could I just briefly say something positive about the kickstand parking agreement? So yeah. I've lived within 150 yards of that parking lot for probably 35 years. And I've always, I just think it was a smart move to have that agreement. Kickstand is a wonderful addition to the neighborhood. And I've lived in this neighborhood. They're a wonderful community partner as far as I'm concerned as an immediate neighbor. I have noticed over the last few years that parking lot is being used more and I'm associating it with kickstand. And so that seemed fair and appropriate. So I just wanted to remark that I had a positive reaction to that agreement.
Great.
Thank you, Councillor. I'll pass that along.
All right. If there's nothing else on the consent agenda, could I get a motion?
I will move that we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
We have a motion to approve the consent agenda by Megan, and I think Mark Zandmiller.
Tim.
Okay, I couldn't tell who had gone first. Tim seconded that.
Any
additional discussion? Roll call vote. Jessica?
Aye.
Megan?
Yes.
Tim?
Aye.
Gladys?
Aye.
Eric?
Aye.
Mark?
Yes.
Chair votes aye. All right. Regular business items. Police space needs analysis, the phase one final report. Will and Chief Holste.
Thank you, Mayor and City Council. And Jonathan, can you please promote Jeff Humphreys and the participants into being a speaker? He's the partner with McKinsey Architecture that has been lead on this project with us. This dates back to 2018 when we first started the police space needs process, following standard process, going from a programming workshop, facility tours, site evaluation, design refinement, and cost estimates. And through a competitive solicitation, we hired McKinsey and executed a contract with them to kind of do that entire process for us. But as we narrowed down on the Columbia lot, if we're doing a police only project, that would require replacement parking and likely the form of a multi-tier parking garage, or as the county has been able to engage with us after getting their operating levy passed, and we are now exploring a joint city-county project. Neither of those alternatives fit into our executed contract with McKinsey, so they were flexible enough to knock out several of the tasks, reduce the contract price, and we are splitting the sort of standard process into now two phases. And so McKinsey is going to wrap up and has wrapped up in a final report their programming work, the facility tours, and site evaluation for us. And that final report was in your packet, and we have Jeff Humphreys, partner with McKinsey Architecture, here to talk through the final report and then answer any questions that you have. Jeff, are you able to?
I think I am.
Okay.
Let's see. So now I should share my screen. Good evening, everybody. Thanks for having us. Let's see. I'm going to screen share. Not that one, but this one. Okay, perfect. Okay. So as well as indicated, we were brought on to help you guys identify what your needs were. We went through a couple different tasks. I can scroll through the 50 or so pages that we had worked through. I'm going to give you a quick high level, and please stop me as you develop questions associated with it.
We can't see any different screen right now.
You can't. I apologize. That's weird. Let me see if I can try that again. Can you see that?
No. There you go.
Okay, good.
Now we can see it.
Okay, thank you. I was thinking I wasn't doing very good already. If I already had questions, I hadn't said anything yet. So, okay. So the first thing that we actually did as I toggle through this is we went and toured the existing facilities to note the deficiencies associated with it. And For the most part, the PD is operating out of a little bit less than half of the space that we would warrant or think that would be warranted for a policing facility. After concluding the existing conditions, we then went through an effort of developing a program. And so the program had a couple different pieces to it, so I'll bring up the summary pages here. So the first thing that we did is we developed a questionnaire. We distributed that to key staff and met with those different stakeholders to develop a program piece associated with it. And then the program, for the most part, basically is a spreadsheet that itemizes the individual rooms, the spaces in them, the adjacencies associated with those, the sizes, quantities, all that sort of thing. So we developed a draft, reviewed it with key staff, made adjustments associated with that, and then we toured facilities to help validate that. So the first step, and you kind of seen the final results, if you would, here, was developing the program, and we came up with just under 13,200 square feet of space that was required. Just keep in mind that the draft actually was a little bit larger than that. This is the final results. So if I scroll to the next page here, these are the individual divisions within PD. And I know you can't see it very well on the screen, but it isn't your guys' packet. So we broke that into a few different pieces. One of them was the lobby and the public areas that would be open to the public or potentially open to the public. The next one was police operations, which included admin, patrol, and detectives. And then there was the sally port and booking area. And facility support spaces. And then we also tracked what the exterior requirements were. So not just the public parking, but the secure parking and any spaces on the outside. So that's what the next few pages are. So I'm going to just quickly scroll through those. So that's each of the different divisions that we went through. And this was based on our past experience and space standards from IACP. So this is a couple of pages taken from that, as well as this. And then we went and toured three different facilities that were similar in nature. And so those included item number one, which was Sandy PD. And then item number two, or site number two, was a community policing facility for the city of Gresham. And that was located out in Rockwood. And then the last one was Westland PD. And so I'll scroll through those. I'm sorry, I said Westland, but I meant Canby. So the first one here is the Sandy PD. And so we just kind of noted the size of it, the amount of staff that they currently have and what it was designed for. And then we did the same thing for Gresham. And if I go to the next page here, you can actually see the Canby PD. Once we were done touring those, and I did want to highlight that we were afforded the opportunity to have Councillor McBride and Councillor Saunders join us. So we sat down and kind of scrutinized the program and made some adjustments to it. And then there were some adjustments that came afterwards, a little ways after, to land on that 13,200 square feet that I had highlighted before. But that was the rigorous process that we went through to actually confirm the sizing that would be required for 20 years of growth. The next task that we went through then was to evaluate a number of different sites that the city had wanted to look at. There were 7 sites that were identified. And so these were locating those 7 different sites in the city proper. City staff actually performed the zoning information that would restrict or govern the how the site was actually developed. So this is a table that shows the requirements associated with each of the different sites. And then our next task was to go through and not design the building, but to quickly test the site through a test fit to see if that building would fit on the site and what were the constraints or challenges associated with that so that those could be ranked. So keep in mind, each of these schemes are just showing one possible way that the site can actually be laid out. It might not be the best scenario, but it's one to just kind of illustrate how it could work. So this is the site that was at State Street, just across from City Hall. This one would require us to elevate the building to be able to get the dedicated parking and tuck it into the site. So there's some challenges associated with that scheme. And the next one here was referred to as the Cascade site. So this is down next to the highway. And so we laid out how that could actually be configured with access off of Wine Country Avenue on the south side and Cascade Avenue on the north side, and showing dedicated public parking in the front, secure parking in the back. And then the next one we looked at was the Cascade lot. And so here the building pretty much fills out a good portion of the site, but it did fit on that site. And the next one that we looked at was City Hall itself. This one, not surprising to you since you're intimately familiar with it, would require some pretty significant tweaks to try to build a new building around it or replace the existing structure. So that had its own challenges. And we also looked at a couple sites that were up the hill. One of them was the pool site. And so configuring how that might be able to configure next to the existing fire station. So we laid out that. So you can see the public parking here on the left with the building and then secure parking on the right side. And then the next one that we looked at is just across the street from it. And this is Public Works. And so here we laid out how we might be able to configure the parking and the building and still provide some level of visual connection from 18th Street. So this one has the building elevated over the top of parking here with the access to the building either off 18th Street or in the public works yard. And then the last site that we looked at was the Columbia Lot site. And we looked at development of the east side or the west side lot. The west side lot looked to be the better strategy of actually being developed. And so this is how we configured a 13,200 square foot building with secure parking on it, maintaining the charging stations that are off to the west side and preserving the public parking on the east side there next to the building. And so you can also see we're proposing that the entry to the building would be off Columbia Street closer to the public parking here. With the displacement of the public parking with this building being built on it, as Will had indicated, it would make sense the city would be interested in replacing that parking. So after we completed those different test fits, then we were able to actually go through and rank the sites. And so we use the IACP guidelines for evaluating the sites. There's 18 different criteria. These are the different criteria here. And then this is the table that was developed as a result of the ranking. So for each of the different sites, you'll see HR, Hood River, and then M for McKenzie. So we independently ranked them, and then we came together to share what our notes were. And then down to the bottom, you can actually see how the sites actually ranked. And the Columbia lot was deemed as being the most appropriate site for the different conditions that we were looking at. pretty significantly, you could say. And so that gives you a very quick overview of the tasks that we actually went through. So with that, I can stop sharing and or just turn it over to questions or continue to share and ask questions.
I can't see any hands up. Is there anyone that has questions?
Council is, I think, Councilor Cunahan's raising his.
Okay, I can't see everyone in this because of the screen share.
That's okay. I'll speak up next time,
okay.
Mayor.
Sorry.
I have some questions about the ranking criteria. You had mentioned it was based on some type of standard or something. What was the standard of that?
This is the criteria that we evaluated it against here, the sites. And so these are criteria that are established by the International Association of Chiefs of Police. Mm. And so there's a number of different pieces on here. And the objective, of course, is to make it so that it is a very objective evaluation of the sites. So the cost of land, whether you own the land or not, in other words, the size of the site, the shape of the site, each of those things have their own challenges associated with how the site may be able to be developed.
Interesting. So for each one of these items, then, is there a rubric that you use? I mean, is there actually data behind this that we're not seeing? Or was it just kind of a subjective evaluation of these things?
So for each one of those different pieces, we rank them on a scale of 1 to 7 because there were 7 different sites.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the matrix that we actually use as far as evaluation between them.
Right, but so, when you went in and you looked at and you thought about how to rank, say, like the response time, was there a set of response times or response times estimated for the ranking?
Perfect. Let me answer something not related to response times, then I'm going to turn it over to the chief that can mm-hmm. talk about that. So for each of these different things, we actually took the time to actually think about how, like, so I'm going to say items number 5, 6, and 7. Those were for public access. So we looked at where the proximity of it was in relationship to the denser portions of the population and how easy it was to get to and from the site. And then, Chief, can you chime in on the response time?
So when we looked at response time, we're looking at flow to and from locations as far as quality access roads. That's what we were looking at as far as what meets to go to the freeway. We can reach the west side of Hood River via 63 going off to 62. And as far as, again, hitting Oak Street and going to the main thoroughfares of the city.
Yeah, thanks, Chief. I guess what I'm trying to get at, though, is that, you know, I mean, for a particular ranking criteria, let's say that the difference between like a 1 and a 4, were there a range of response times that fell into those ranking criteria? Or was it just kind of using your best professional judgment? I guess that's what I'm getting at.
Go ahead, Will.
Okay, I think I understand your question, Councilor Cunahan, and what these were not, it's not that 4 means a 2-minute response time and a 5 means a minute 45 second response time,
mm-hmm.
are relative to each other. So one site being relatively better than another, but the scores themselves don't objectively mean a specific specific performance, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess it does, but, you know, somebody to come up with an evaluation of whether one site's better than another, there has to be some type of difference in the response times. So was that based on professional judgment, or were they actually estimated?
So that's where we coming together as a team and talking through these, relying on Dustin relying on Chief Holste, relying on me for some of the financial aspects, we could pull on our professional judgment to say one is better than the other relative to them.
So looking at like kind of a different, you know, because I'm seeing here that the HR, I assume, refers to the police department, right? Those are the police things?
That's the staff team. So that's yep.
Yep. And then the M is the
McKinsey team, the architects.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I did see that the McKinsey team did actually rank the response times. Just to point that out, but like for instance, like the neighborhood context, what was involved with that? What does that mean?
Yeah, that is it in alignment with the land use code, similar uses around it? Is it being put into primarily surrounded by residential single family, or is it amongst other government buildings and higher intensity uses?
And so again, was there like a rubric for that? Was there some type of criteria, or again, was that just professional judgment?
That was our understanding of the city.
I'll just jump into that one. Mm-hmm. I think what you're saying, it would be, for instance, if you had a C zone and everything was commercial around it, and then you were going to rank that particular site that was a C with C all the way around it versus another place that was R with R all the way around it, because a police department is a C use. It's not an R use. So it would get a higher ranking in a C zone because it already complies to that zone. So I think that's, is that correct? Is that what you were trying to say, Will?
Yeah, but to my point before, it's not that a four means that it is amongst other C type uses. It's that we saw, you know, we could see that something in the public works yard has kind of poor fit with public works activities and the single family residential that's around it, versus downtown is amongst other government buildings and already has a lot of traffic. Not that there was a specific, a four means this and a five means that, but we could see that Columbia was better than the public works yard in that respect, relative to each other.
So how about traffic congestion?
Same, our understanding of the conditions among.
And what was the point of the visibility and prominence criteria?
I have it in my mind, but Jeff, can you speak a little bit more?
Sure, visibility and prominence, that's not too different than proximity to other government functions. So the idea of having it, so like the public works yard that I was describing, that would be largely down in a hole, not visible from the public, for the public traveling down 18th Avenue. So that one ranks a little more poorly than some of the other sites that would have a much more prominent location as far as people being able to see it and know the importance of the structure and its use.
I wonder, Jeff, can you, because if I'm understanding where the question's coming from, it's the IACP values that and says that that's important. Can you explain a bit about why they, because some people might think that maybe it shouldn't be prominent like why would that be something that the IACP would think is?
Sure, a really good question. Maybe to stand back, the other thing that we actually did on this too is we didn't create any level of importance to it. So as Will is kind of getting at, these are all ranked as being equal. So if the city said, hey, look, we think that this structure should be very, very prominent or not very prominent, then it may be weighted, in which case then that you don't get a 1 point for that category, you get two or whatever the ranking is on it. But collectively, when we met with staff on this, that was not determined as being a thing. And so all of these 18 different pieces are all equal in value. So related to IACP, there is nothing in here. They don't put one value over the other. This is just the different means of being able to evaluate the sites. And then if the municipality is interested in actually ranking or weighting them, then we can actually weight them based on what you think is more important. So for instance, you could pull any of these things. It could be that the cost of land, the city does not want to buy new land. So all of the sites that are actually currently owned by the city actually would, if that was the weighted version of that, would actually rank higher.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was going to be another one of my questions. And, you know, I'm like looking at the difference between the pool site and the Columbia lot site. And I'm seeing that the pool site is ranked 7th in response time. And the Columbia lot was ranked 3 with respect to response time. And, you know, to me, I guess in my mind, just kind of like thinking out loud, that maybe response time may be more important than perhaps like a neighborhood context type of metric. I mean, that would be one thing that you would want to consider. And I guess another reason why I'm bringing that up was the comment that you made there towards the end, that the that the Columbia lot site was ranked first by a lot. And so I think, you know, it's worth going in and like looking at why things are ranked like this. And I think also one of the reasons why I'm bringing this up is that there's a lot of importance being placed on these criteria. And they do seem to be somewhat subjective and not necessarily weighted in any way, shape, or form. So I mean, I'm suggesting that that perhaps is a is a drawback of the ranking. And I think if it's possible, it might be good to point out some of the rationale behind the ranking in the report, if that's possible. And I'll let others talk. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Others?
So this is Megan. I guess following up on this visibility and prominence, why would you want this building to stand out above everything else? Because I guess in my head, I'd be picturing you want it to blend in. What is the point of that, or why would that be a positive?
If you're asking me again, there none of these are weighted, so there's just it's just the difference between a government building and a utilitarian building. So that's really kind of what it comes down to.
So like you'd mentioned that if it was in the public works yard, it would be on stilts, so you could see it from 18th. Like, is that important for some reason?
I'm just describing that could be a means of actually having it so that it is actually lifted up and it's visible, so people have there's a recognition. So I think prominence might also be one of those things where, like, where do I need to go? And so there's a visual connection if you're on a public right of way, as opposed to you can't see the buildings as you're coming down 18th and not necessarily know where you go.
I think it's maybe the difference between why we have City Hall in the middle of downtown, but the school district building is, you know, tucked away in a residential neighborhood. Something that needs to be accessed by the public and kind of is a feature of prominence. It's been often that those buildings are placed where they're visually obvious. But if that's, that's just the view of the International Association of Chiefs of Police when they were making this ranking.
And we saw it both ways when we did the tours, you know, the rock, the Gresham one was basically right in town. The Sandy one was in town, but kind of on the end of town. And the Canby one was way off compared to right downtown, because it was a larger facility and they, I think they had the space and they were combining it with some other things. So it ended up being not right downtown. So we did see all three things when we did the tours. And it just, you know, I think part of it was just availability of land for those particular entities, municipalities.
Mayor, if I could too, I think this conversation actually points to some of the usefulness of having criteria, because then it generates conversations about what the city might prioritize, not just the staff or the architects, but what city councilors might prioritize. So it's, it, you know, part of the reason we use the criteria is to generate these kind of conversations and elicit those types of values. This isn't a, you know, these are not, there's not a right or wrong answer here. So just wanted to add that to the conversation.
Thank you. I think that's right on. It, basically, the process itself was valuable for thinking through, I think, was at least half of the value. Because the numbers themselves don't specifically, absolutely correspond to an objective measure. But when we're having to go through the exercise, as Rachel was saying.
And I think that, you know, for instance, the pool site, which is number five, was high on response time. It was also high on land use, but that being said, cost, the city doesn't own it. So, you know, it's, we evaluated it, but, it may not be anything that can happen in 5 or 10 years. So it was a good exercise to figure out, you know, and the public works yard is basically right across the street, but it's a completely different site. And the access is weird and the visibility is weird and the ownership of how that works back there with the county. So, you know, there's always all these different types of issues. You know, it's trying to compare apples to oranges to bananas here. It's really difficult, but very helpful.
Yeah.
Tim?
Thanks, Mayor. You know, I agree that it's good to foster the discussion, but I do think it's warrant. I think it does warrant kind of like a more in-depth look at these criteria, and especially if we're going to be using them as a weighty way of choosing a site. So I think that there needs to be a certain amount of transparency associated with how we're interpreting this and how we are valuing or not valuing these criteria. So I guess, you know, in the context of approving this annual report, I'm not sure that that's something that falls on the contractors to elucidate that in the report, or is that something that falls on us? But I think some more discussion about the criteria and how the criteria were applied is certainly warranted, because I think it is important. I mean, it's a big decision. Right, and if we're going to put a lot of weight in these criteria as far as using them to select a site, then we should be expound on the use of them a little bit more. You know, and I'm like, you know, I look at some of these, and you know, again, the response time thing came to my mind, because I mean, that's a really important metric. The ability to actually have the police go somewhere quickly, you know, when there's an emergency is a pretty big deal. But then, you know, for some of the other ones, you know, and, you know, I see that for City Hall, not to pick this apart, but I guess this is just kind of trying to make my point here, is for the City Hall, it was ranked number 2 by the city staff and number 7 by the consulting firm. So you're having these wide ranges of interpretations by the two different groups. And so, I mean, I'm just pointing that out. And I think it's that we owe it, because I think people are going to question it. And I think that we need to be very clear about, you know, about it. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Additional comments or questions? Eric?
Thank you, Mayor. I share some of the same feelings that I was hearing from Councillor Cunahan. Would say, you know, as a threshold matter, I'm very excited about this project. I think our police department needs to get out of the basement, and they deserve, and the community deserves, a more vibrant station than we have. And sort of tying back to discussions we've had previously, I'm uneasy about the location question. And I frankly am thankful for this report, because it does give us some metrics for discussion. So I think we've moved the discussion along. And I think, you know, there is a lot of subjectivity here. And frankly, the role of council, I think, is to be the ultimate subjective decision maker with respect to this fundamental question about where we should put the station. And I guess what I would also add to the discussion is that there, and I don't think anyone's disputing this, but there are other factors that we should also be considering. You know, for example, like cost of land, site development. What probably didn't go into this is, what's the lost opportunity cost for the particular property that's selected? I mean, because of the Columbia lot, for example, very valuable property, which might not be the case for another parcel. And so lost opportunity cost, not on this table, but something council should be thinking about. And also kind of just general intangibles and atmospherics to the downtown ethos, something very hard to put into a factor, but at least is a factor in my mind that I think rests with council. So I don't know if there's a question anywhere in here. I guess I'm thankful for this report. It is good to see at least some quantitative analysis of what is really a qualitative decision. But I feel like council then has to take this a step further and make that ultimate judgment.
Thank you, Eric. Others? Mark? Daniel?
Yeah, I just wanted to give a nod to, you know, Tim's line of questioning and stuff. And you know, I think that there's a couple things that we haven't talked about yet tonight, but we will, that are the bigger fish to fry. I think that, you know, as an engineer, this is a ranking score versus a score. It's a ranking matrix versus a scoring matrix. If we were going to rely on it as a scoring matrix, I think it would, you know, I would suggest it be done slightly different, but it's very educational in that we have two groups of professionals that weighed in. So, you know, I think that there's value just in how we got to this and how it facilitated the discussions we've had so far and the discussions we'll have moving forward. So, I just wanted to say, Tim, as a fellow scientist, I do understand. I understand where you're coming from. Okay.
Others? Megan, do you have your hand up? Okay, Megan.
Yeah, I guess just in the report itself, page 64 of the packet, next steps, it talks about, you know, just replacing the parking if we're building on the Columbia lot. And I think it's important that we're, and maybe this is outside of this report, but it seems weird to just say replacement when we're really talking about expanding if we're going to be doing that site. So I don't want that to get lost in the replacement wording in here. And that might be beyond McKenzie, I guess. I don't know if it needs to be changed in the report, but It was kind of hitting me wrong when I was reading it yesterday. So I just wanted to bring it up.
Councillor Saunders, I understand what you're saying. In all of my talking points, I always say at minimum replacement, but goal is expansion. And I think, Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, but some just minor text error, or tech, not errors, but text modifications, not a problem to...
Yeah. No, we can do that for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And I can't speak for all of council, but I guess I'm on my end, if we're going to do the Columbia lot, it needs to not be just if we can do more, it needs to be, we have to do more, otherwise we've lost that whole opportunity of our easiest expansion of parking downtown, which I guess maybe is going back to Eric's lost opportunity cost, but so I guess, you know, and if we're ranking other things, that's got to be a high priority from my perspective.
I agree with that statement, Megan, about the parking. You know, it's replacement, but we need to address it if we're going to use this. And I would say we need to expand it. I mean, I think it needs to be expanded. We need to talk about doing that at the same time if we're going to choose this spot. You know, we're talking about it right now, accepting the report, but I love all this discussion that we're having about it being a matrix and a way to talk about, a way to rank, but it isn't a score. And there's other things we need to think about too. And I just, this is great in-depth discussion. You know, this is a very thorough report. But of course we think of additional things when it gets right down to it that we wanted to include in our decision-making. So thank you everyone for all the great discussion tonight on this. It's been really good. Are there more discussion? Additional comments?
So,
Jessica? I can't see everyone at once, you guys. Sorry about that. So I'm trying to scroll through everybody's pictures.
There's like a little line in between the shared screen and the people, and you can move it over.
Okay, let me try to get everybody's face up there again. Okay, thank you for that technology tip, Jessica.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Do we need the shared screen, since I think the discussion is the most valuable part for me right now, too?
Yeah, I don't think we really need the shared screen anymore.
Yeah, I don't either. How do I turn that off for you guys?
Jonathan, can you assist with that?
All right. Thank you. Jessica.
I was going to say that I didn't have any questions on the report. I appreciate Jeff being here and the work of Mackenzie and all our staff that's been engaged with it. I was mostly going to ask for Will to remind us again what the next steps would be if we accept the report today.
Yeah, so this is just sort of wrapping a bow on prior work. You know, each one of these modules came and we spent full city council meetings on each one. So this is more just a organization and wrapping up of prior work. And the next steps are I'm writing an RFP and we'll have review of that for architectural engineering firms to propose on two concurrent but separate projects. One is to some degree doing the entire space needs process over again, but with a city-county shared space. And then two is to keep moving forward on picking up preliminary design and cost estimation for the Columbia lot, but conjoined with replacement and ideally expansion of parking. And the point of doing both of those simultaneously is so that we can get prices on both and we can hear from if the county is in or out. And if the county is out, then we don't need to embark on another set of solicitation and award. We'll have an alternative ready to go.
What kind of time frame for that, Will? So we would, you know, be able to present that to the county, or whoever would present that to the county.
Yeah, I'm on my third draft of it with our consultants, just as the freeze and your act stuff has kind of taken precedence in the past week, but I'm hoping to re-engage on that and get the RFP. Hopefully in the next week or two, have a final draft that can go out for comments and be reviewed by the county.
And do we know if the county is going to, they might even say no at that point, if possible, or?
Well, Well, I expect that they'll have that Jeff will have input, and he's already seen iterations, and just make sure that it fits in line with what he thinks that his commissioners need, and then we'll put it out and get costs. And at that point, I think once we get the responses back, I think the county will know the price tag and have that in order to support their decision.
Okay. Questions on that process and how that would work? Megan?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm going to go back to myself, but like working with the county is definitely my top priority, if at all possible. And I'm wondering how you see that process going of, you know, I guess, again, kind of in the same as the last time, of we're not just saying like, okay, are you in or out right now? Like, answer us, because we're going to keep going forward. Like, how do we really give them a collaborative opportunity to engage? How are you picturing that process?
Yeah, well, we won't issue the solicitation until the county signs off on it and says that this is, yes, the project that they think that they need to embark on. And then I'm sure they'll be on the evaluation team as well in the meetings with the proposers. You know, I think we're really excited about a city-county project, and we want to make it a success. You know, I think we're all in on trying to figure this out, because it's what we hear everyone in the community who has an opinion on this say that it's what they're interested in. I think just setting expectations, though, the numbers are going to be very hard, I think, to pencil out. The financial analysis, I believe, came out with about $35 million would be produced if we did a countywide. But instead of doing a 13,000 square foot building, we're talking about doing a 60,000 square foot building. And just to be completely upfront and honest, and expectations set is $35 million doesn't get you a 60,000 square foot courthouse, sheriff's office, and police station. So we're going to continue working on that and giving it everything we've got. But I do also don't want to sort of ignore some of the arithmetic realities of it as well.
Eric?
Just a quick process question. So by accepting this report, that's just accepting this as a factual piece of information. We're not adopting the report. Do I have that right?
Correct. It's just we're finishing up the contract, and the final, each one of these pieces has gone through in prior city council meetings, and this is just putting together with a set of recommendations, which pretty much just describe the path that we're on right now.
Mark?
Yeah, I like how you did the sum up for the next steps. That's great. I really think a joint community-wide thing with county and city is the big win, even though it's a lot more moving pieces and stuff. I agree with Will with we're going to need numbers, but I think we're going to need to give the county thing some germination time with the county commissioners. I don't have a real sense of what that looks like. Maybe that's on council to work with the commissioners and find out if the political will is there in the next X amount of months, years to do it. And I think that's a fair thing too. I don't quite have a suggestion of how we best organize that, but I just want to make sure that we're giving the joint project the oxygen and the water it needs to see if it can bloom true, as a preferred choice, but being prepared to go the city way if that's the solution. So I guess for today, I just want to say that know, the preference is county, city. We're preparing for a fallback, but it's not two equal things. It's we're preparing for a fallback to the one. So that's my opinion.
And Councilor Zamiller, just assure you that that's, we're giving it full thrift, we're giving it full effort, and that's why it's taking a little bit more time. If we were just speeding ahead on the police facility on Columbia lot, we'd already have a solicitation ready to go. But I really want to make sure that it's this RFP is really clear, really well thought out, and gives the city county option its best chance.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm sort of keeping my powder dry for this discussion, just politically. But having a sense within this, you know, with the whole council of, yeah, we should be actively discussing with, you know, county commissioners and bringing that, those discussions back. Are we at that point now, or are we waiting for the RFP? What's the advice / opinion?
Rachel, do you have input on that?
If I'm hearing you correctly, Councilor Zamiller, I think you're asking if it's time to talk about the potential here for a joint facility. Absolutely. I mean, for those counselors who see that as an important thing for the community to be pursuing, absolutely. It's completely up to you. Right. There's no reason not to.
Right. Like I said, I was sort of feeling like we were waiting for one more piece of coordinating work to put a structure to that discussion. I've had some small, but I think that if now is the time, then that's great. We should do our job. Yeah.
And Councillor, we could certainly request, the mayor and council, if you were interested in this, we could certainly request a joint meeting to talk about this. There are a lot of options for how we go about this. Mm-hmm. Right now we're working with staff we have not reached out, nor would we to county commissioners, but we're just working collaboratively with staff and as Will said, pushing this as much as we can, but having to engage in a more formal process if that's what the council would like to.
So if we had, you know, informal moving towards formal one-on-one discussions, and then at what point would a joint meeting that sounded right to me, what you just outlined, is that a January thing, February thing? I don't know.
It could be. I mean, what I'd suggest is it could be when the RFP comes together. I mean, that's sort of a decision for the council and the county to make, maybe perhaps the mayor and the chair. So certainly could be January, February. We'll take direction from the city council.
I guess just process wise, would we call it a work session where we actually couldn't make any decision, or would it be, an actual meeting? I mean, of course we'd notice it regardless, but say the RFP was ready and Will and Rachel had both looked at it and Dan, if he needed to, and whoever else, Chief Holstein, and felt our sides that looked pretty good. And then we gave it to the county and they kind of had looked at it, at least staff. Then should we have a joint meeting to talk about that RFP? I mean, would that be a point where we could have that discussion and then we could all go nod our heads, yes, we think this is a good thing, or the county says no, city's going forward. How would you imagine that going, Rachel?
Yeah, Mayor, I think there are a lot of different options here. I think it depends on what the outcome is. If what we're trying to get at is whether or not both entities are really going to do this, then we'll certainly have some conversations at the staff level to figure out where the county is on that. They are participating, but I respectfully suggest that perhaps getting with the chair figure out if it's time to have that meeting, and we can determine together what the outcome of that would be, would probably be the approach I would take.
I will make a commitment to get a hold of Chair Oates in the next couple weeks and talk to him about it.
If I may, Mayor, add, you know, I think a piece of it is what, as a council, do you need as far as process to feel confident in the outcome and build legitimacy for the decision? Because I've seen we've had full co-meetings on some planning issues and COVID response, and then, you know, construction excise tax was just a small city-county, small select working group. And so we've done it in multiple different ways, and it all gets us to, I think, successful outcomes. And so I think a lot of it is your discretion about how big does it need to be in order to feel like everyone has their fingerprints on it sufficiently.
And I think that some of the smaller logistical parts could be done with a subgroup, but I think, you know, kind of the big money question, you know, we know what we thought we were pretty sure what might happen with just switching over from a fire bond to a public safety bond, and hopefully it'd be, you know, same amount, but for the county it's going to be a whole different box of items here. And so, you know, whether they have the taste and the willpower and the enthusiasm for that, I think it's going to take a full, you know, commission, full council for them to really feel good about doing that. It won't be just a subcommittee thing. I think it'll be bigger. But the smaller parts of it, they could probably do subcommittee. But I think just the big decision is going to have to be the full board.
And we should absolutely have the conversation of the staffing that it's going to require for integrating services that are not available now.
And that'll be a whole new discussion if we're going to do that. I mean, we talked about Columbia Gorge.
That shouldn't be an if. It shouldn't be an if. It should be we should. We should. And right. It's not only happening citywide, but statewide and nationwide.
I guess what we're talking about right now is a building, is getting a building put up. And then the integration of the other items is another, that's a whole nother conversation.
And right, but staff would include the building, right?
Pardon?
You have to know about how much staff you're going to be fitting into a building, or potential staff you want to have into a building. I mean, I think that's important to at least have that conversation.
And we
is this building going to be able to support not only police on both city and county, but also the behavioral health specialists that will work within this building as well?
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, absolutely, yeah. Because we talked about having those kinds of things, even if it's just for the city. So, yes, absolutely. All right. Well, I'll talk to Chair Oates about the possibility of how that discussion could look. And then bring that information back at the next meeting, at our next meeting. We're doing something joint. So do you, go ahead, Megan.
I'm gonna semi-segue, but when you're saying, you know, the full commission is gonna need to be on board for whatever bomb campaign they would need to do, I guess is the segue to, I don't think tonight's necessarily the night to talk about it, but I just want to ask that we do talk about it. We talked back in September, and I definitely left that meeting feeling uncomfortable with, I think, a bit my own discomfort and what seemed like a number of other counselors' discomfort with, like, where we were going and the path we were on, or the, like, I guess seeing the end, you know, ribbon of we're going for this bond at this time for this amount, you know, the end, which I, you know, if we're going to do that, we all need to be very much on board, because we're obviously going to be the face in the campaign for that. And I don't feel like we don't have to be 100% there, but I just feel like it's something we need to really talk about more as a commission. and kind of take that step back than I think we have been doing. A number of these meetings have been answering this, like, here's the next step, and we're moving forward, and so we're on this treadmill, but I'd like to kind of back up at some point and actually see where we are and see, you know, and if I'm the only one feeling uncomfortable, then that's, you know, that's fine, but it didn't seem like it last time, and I guess I'd like to find a time and space to work through that if I'm not alone.
Yeah, I echo that sentiment. We're still in a pandemic, and I feel really uncomfortable even thinking of the idea of asking people for money when we're still in a pandemic and will be for quite some time.
And I don't know if we want to have a work session, a separate work session. I know we're going to talk about later on, we're going to talk about a special work session for Rand Road. And we might want to talk about potentially a special work session regarding, you know, the bond and timing and COVID involved and how that might work. But until we know, you know, kind of, are we going with just the city? Or are we going to try and go with the county? That's, you know, it's going to make it a little more difficult. So I don't know that we need to set that work session up, but maybe I can get some more information from Chair Oates before the next meeting, and we can have another discussion about this. A short discussion, because we're going to have a long meeting next time. We have a public hearing that we need to conclude or probably conclude next time. And so we might need to have a little more discussion on having a work session on this. I do, Mark?
Yeah, just thinking about the motion here, it a question about the report recommendations, if it's in that, if the recommendations are in that discussion section in the middle of that page, it feels like those are the steps to proceed once we have an agreement on which of these two paths we're on. So my sense in reading this was that we want to finish putting a bow on the first stage, like Will said. And so to me, that's a motion to accept the report, but that the recommendations are in sort of waiting for the next step. Is that a true interpretation?
Are you asking Will?
I guess I'm just, I saw a nod from Rachel. I didn't quite see a nod from Will, although that was his expectation too. So, or
I think it's accepting, understanding the context of this project was the contract that we executed with McKenzie, and understanding that following that linear path, this was the recommendations from McKenzie. If that makes sense, but understanding that, yeah, we're certainly exploring the city county option, which is out of scope with the contract that we executed and a new path.
So I get that, but I guess on Mark's thing, like especially the recommendation number one of going to design and replacement parking just feels like, again, we're kind of on this treadmill that we can't stop.
So, councilors, if I could, we are really just looking for report acceptance. If you didn't accept the report, that would be okay too. We will have time to come back. We've heard you. We will be coming back with an RFP for a joint facility. We can schedule more time to talk about this. The report does not bind you to anything. The report is tying a bow on it.
That's really good. Kate, I'm ready to make a motion. Okay, if you're ready.
Go ahead.
So I move to thank McKenzie and accept the final Hood River Police Needs Assessment Report.
I second that.
I think Mark made a motion and Jessica seconded the motion to accept the report from McKenzie regarding the space needs analysis for a new police facility. Additional discussion?
Eric? Madam Mayor, if I could just say, with the hopes that this would make the minutes, that my interpretation is we are accepting this report as a factual report and not adopting the report. I think that's been made clear, but I like it in the minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Eric. Roll call vote. Jessica?
Aye.
Megan?
Yes.
Tim?
Aye.
Gladys?
Aye.
Mark?
Yes.
Eric?
Aye.
And chair votes aye. All right.
Great work, you guys. I mean, that's a lot of work. Oof. Oof.
Man.
We just keep making it more.
Phase one, check. let's see, you're up again. Mosher IGA.
Thank you. This is much smaller topic in importance, but one that I sort of is very special to me, because I any way that we can, even in small ways, become a little bit more efficient as local government and provide a little bit more value for less cost, I think is something that really motivates me. So this has been something I've been interested in. We've been talking to Mosher for, I think, about 2 years now, and it's kind of ebbed and flowed. But they've kind of, over in Mosher, gotten to a crisis point where they really need some assistance and really use this taken off of their plate. And it's something that is big to them, but isn't in the scope of how many accounts that we bill and read. It's not too much of an addition for the city. So under this IGA, we would monthly read the meters in Mosher and process the billing through our existing financial system and charge Mosher for our actual cost to do so, plus 10% administrative overhead. And they would lose this responsibility and gain access to additional features for their residents that our residents enjoy, but they do not yet, such as automated recurring billing and the ability to make online payments. So, you know, that's really the 30,000 foot view of what's going on here, is just sharing infrastructure rather than creating isolated processes between entities. And I'd be happy to answer any of the more detailed questions on this.
Does anyone have questions? Megan?
Of course. One big picture, I think this is a really great use of shared resources and efficiency creation. So I am excited about it. I guess just in the detail question of it, it says, you know, like 3.7% of Mosher's revenue goes to us. Is that in addition to the actual cost recovery, or that is the estimated cost recovery amount?
As the apart from the 30,000 some odd dollars up front, the ongoing, that should be covering our costs on an ongoing basis. And we can periodically, I think, reanalyze that. How I got to that number is going through and saying, you know, our water operations lead, our meter reader, our utility billing clerk, me, our AP person, how much are we going to, and all of us working together, thinking through it and saying, how much are we going to be working on this on an ongoing basis? And then what is our hourly total loaded costs? And that then equaled 3.7% of their revenue.
Okay. And then, but we do generally track staff hours on projects. So we would be able to, you know, true that up if it was off in the future.
It would be, I think, the same sort of survey type method. How much, you know, Jamie, how much time have you been spending on this? It's not, except like when we're reading the meters, we'll know exactly how much time we're spending reading their meters. But like Mikkel sort of starting a stopwatch when someone comes in.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. And then I guess in that same realm of, we're, this wouldn't add, like, we need to have another FTE capacity just for Mosier? This is kind of just additional stuff on our current staff, or?
Yeah, it's a matter of hours. Okay. Per month for most everyone on an ongoing basis. It's been a fair amount of work to start up, but on an ongoing basis, not major.
Okay, awesome. Thank you all.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Mark?
Just making sure that we have the liability stuff figured out, that, you know, if someone slides off the road on the way to Mosier, is you know, are these cases all covered in workman's comp and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, Scott Rainier in CIS was involved and has reviewed, and we're both insured by the same insurer.
All right. If no additional questions, there's a motion on page 110 of our packet.
I move to authorize the city manager to sign an intergovernmental agreement with the city of Mosier to provide utility meter reading and billing services.
Megan's made a motion.
I second.
And Gladys has seconded that motion. Additional discussion? Okay, roll call vote. Jessica?
Aye.
Megan?
Yes.
Eric?
Aye.
Tim?
Aye.
Gladys?
Aye.
Mark?
Yes.
And chair votes aye. All right. That's going to be a great service for them.
Thank you.
Report to council regarding chamber meeting. Will?
Actually, Mayor, I think we skipped the...
Oh, you're right. We've got the homeless shelter, and that's Rachel.
Yeah, and Mayor, Councilors, this is informational only, just to let you know that staff has been working cooperatively with community social service agencies to address homelessness. You might remember that in June 2020, we agreed to serve as a fiscal agent for a grant from Providence to address homelessness. The grant enabled a largely grassroots and ad hoc group to convene and draft a strategic plan and action plan to address homelessness. And action items include improving community outreach and engagement, providing housing, including supportive housing and affordable housing, addressing immediate basic needs of individuals experiencing homelessness, and providing direct outreach to individuals experiencing homelessness. The city has agreed to hire a contract with an outreach worker for the winter. That was one of the goals, using remaining grant funds. So in addition to helping individuals overcome barriers to housing, the outreach worker will gather data on the homeless population. This is really important to securing federal funds for this work. And Chief Damian, Chief Holstey, and I are looking forward to working with the outreach worker. She's a licensed clinical social worker. She'll serve as a referral source for emergency services and also begin to help us identify the gaps between social services and our emergency service providers. Long-term, with regards to homelessness, there is a need in the community for a backbone organization for homelessness work. This in rural areas is not typically a city function, but given the COVID situation we're in and the circumstances we're in, the city has stepped up to meet this need at this time. And that's all I have. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Gladys?
Yeah, thank you for this information. So I don't want to know who the social worker is, or I don't need to know who the social worker is, but who does she or he technically work for? Like, who houses this individual?
Yeah, so it's actually going to be a contract with an individual licensed clinical social worker. You might remember that this happened in the spring, a sort of grassroots, it was called Gorge Outreach, program was initiated to house homeless individuals. It is not currently a service that we have in the community, but she will be integrating with, programs like Bridges to Health, Bridges, I believe that's what it's called, Bridges to Health, to get individuals into services, We do have access, she will have access to the homelessness management. We're learning a whole bunch of new language here. Homeless information services, it's a national database where all of this information can be tracked. So there is quite an infrastructure, so, in the communities to support this work.
That's amazing. Thank you for that. I'd love to continue to just get updates as they come along. Really exciting.
Yeah, sure, Counselor. We'd be happy to do that. Actually, one of the deliverables will be a report. So we'd be happy to provide that report to Council in a public meeting.
Jessica?
Yes, thank you, Rachel. I was just going to say that I really appreciate this work, and I think it's an important thing for the city to do, even though it's not something that we normally do. I've heard there's hope in the community that the new executive director of Mid-Columbia Community Action Council would be interested in really picking up this role. So I hope that's that comes to fruition. And then I also see this as an important piece of, our city council's conversation about how do we better serve our population, our community beyond police and EMS. And I think that this is a really good way to do that. So I appreciate it. Thanks, Rachel.
Yeah, Councilor and Mayor, if I might, I could report, thanks to some really good work from Chief Damian and Chief Holstey, we are trying to integrate our computer system. In my experience, one of the barriers is computer systems sometimes. Law enforcement, EMS, with even hospitals and other social service agencies. So we are working with Pacific Source right now to try and integrate those systems. We'll see if that's something that we can actually do, but there's some really great work happening. And Pacific Source is, they are our CCO here in the community, and they are responsible for putting together a behavioral health improvement plan. You're all probably familiar with the community health improvement plan, but a behavioral health improvement plan. And we are really looking forward to being an active partner in that, so we can, again, help identify where that gap is between social services and emergency services.
That is amazing. Thank you guys so much. As you're talking, I can't help but smile from like ear to ear. We're so cool. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was, thanks to Providence Foundation for the money that put this together. And then, we helped organize it. And we've had 3 meetings now, and we're going to get together again in February. And we've all kind of made promises for some different things we're going to do. And then this licensed clinical social worker is one of the items that we're doing. And then information to all of our electeds to let them know, what is going on as we go forward. So, and both of the chiefs stepped up to say they'd help do, the things they're going to do at the last meeting we had. So there's really some momentum to help the community in this capacity. So I'm pretty excited too. Anyone else have questions? Megan?
Sorry, I opened the wrong thing. So I'm gonna fully second what everyone else had said of this. This is sounds like really great work and incredible progress and opportunity. And so thank you all for working on it. Maybe just a very stupid question, but the like backbone organization, is that somehow different, or is there a reason it wouldn't be like the Hood River Shelter Services folks? Does it need to be a government agency, or what?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
That's a great question. So typically in Oregon, there's a couple different models. In the metro area, they have the Joint Office of Homelessness, which is a city and county function. For the other cities, it's often a county that provides this, that type of support. In some of the rural areas, it is often a community Action Council. And the new director of Mid-Columbia Action Council is now a part of the group. And he seems like a very positive addition to the community. So some of it has to do with access to grant funds and federal funds and integration into social services. So that is why, it is typically one of these action councils in rural areas because they have those relationships and that access.
And the shelter services has been, just as their name states, all they have done is just sheltering people in the coldest part of the winter. I mean, that is their function. Through the Gorge Ecumenical Ministries and the churches have helped, and then restaurants have stepped up to help, provide some of the meals and stuff. But there's no entity that's done. I mean, that's what they do. That's all they do. They don't have any more of a infrastructure than that. So, other questions? All right. Great. So that was just informational. Now we are on to chamber meeting. Dustin and Will.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a request that is, or this item is part informational and part request for authorization to proceed with permitting for some temporary uses. A couple of weeks ago, Will Norris and I attended a chamber-led meeting. As we had discussed with you all, this meeting included some of our partner agencies from Oregon Health, the Small Business Association, MCED, rated in order of importance or our favorites, but we also met with the chamber and a group of businesses really from the hospitality and food and beverage sector, really, to look at some of the challenges we continue to face and to hear from those groups in relation to the COVID pandemic. And as things have continued to shift and as we kind of enter into this next season, which is now our shoulder season, or it used to be our shoulder season, and what these businesses are experiencing. We look for some feedback on some of our summer programs and some of the pilot programs in regards to the parklets and temporary uses, and really took some questions from these groups to try to get some feedback. And again, we were just one of the many groups that were there. And so we heard back from these groups, definitely interest in the parklets coming back. They expressed a lot of support for that and interest in participating in the focus group that we intend to convene next month on that. I've reached out to a number of participants from last year's group on any lessons that they've learned. We got a lot of kudos for that. Interesting enough, 3 days later, we had our 2-week pause announced from Kate Brown, which really impacted this sector in particular. So a lot of the issues that we were talking about really became, the stakes became a lot higher for them. Since then, we've had some business meetings. Really, they're in a difficult place. Getting reports of, off by 85% of year-to-date revenues. And they're looking to weather this storm. So it's kind of not the best news, especially for this sector. And the feedback we're getting is pretty dire. So, that's a little bit of a high level overview, but we expect to stay in conversations with them and again, bring back some of our focus and what the city can do and how we can support some of these businesses. I've also heard the next 4 months is key, it's staying alive. They expect, and I think there's still some optimism as they kind of wade through this with the rest of us. So one of the items that we've been looking at is, and this is kind of an extension of some of our seasonal uses, was the use of private property and especially the parking lots. Trying to allow some of these businesses for takeout and expanding their footprints in a temporary basis. They are required to social distance. They're required to reduce occupant loads. So we, kind of with the parklet and the private outside space, we allowed some temporary uses to occur there. And that is seen, you know, it's seen some response. I think when we saw the parklets removed to prepare for some seasonal plow and roadway activity for winter, these became increasingly in vogue and popular. And we have a couple people now that have that are already putting them to use, and people that who want to put them into use. And to and when we feel like we need to come up with a permit response for this, as a way to just have a temporary use measure to make sure that we have a checkpoint for some basic life safety features, fire, building codes, seasonal elements to make sure these structures are safe. And we're looking to council to make sure that unless we're heading in the wrong direction on this, we want to get your input or your authorization on how we move on these things. So this is something that we're preparing for as a really kind of as an emergency measure to help some of these businesses hopefully work things out through the winter and provide that opportunity where we can and give them, you know, maybe some of those advantages. So I think we're giving Will a break on this matter. I think he's had all the other business matters already. So Will, you can please jump in if you had questions or any comments from the chamber.
I was very heavily focused on regulatory planning type issues. So we talked just the littlest bit about municipal operations and restroom availability, and but it was very much the Dustin show. So
so this particular item that we have on page 118 and 19 would be to authorize temporary use for food and beverage on private property, like for instance in a parking space.
We need to come up with some basic program. We don't expect it to be in a particularly onerous group, but something that we need to have something in place for to authorize these temporary uses. And if there was anything that council felt it needed to see in here, or you had any concerns about us doing this, we really welcome your input here.
And I guess my question, I know it's temporary, and it's temporary because of COVID, but if COVID continues into next summer, and then we get a lot of car traffic that needs parking spaces, even though this is gonna be not on the street, if we get a lot more congestion because people can't park in the parking lots like they usually do because these things are in those spaces, would we reevaluate it then?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm hoping that some of these things become less desirable or less necessary come summer, but we absolutely have the opportunity to do that.
Mayor, we are anticipating that these would just be while the weather is bad, then they would come down. They're temporary structures, they would come down when the weather gets better. So similar to the parklet.
Okay, I think as long as we make it extremely clear so people don't assume that if they're putting something up, I spent $5,000 on that or $10,000, it's like, well, you can spend that much, but we could have you take these down next week when it comes to March 1st or April 1st or whatever. So I just think we need to make it really clear for people that it is temporary for sure.
Yeah. And I think we, in my mind, the building code will allow a temporary structure for 6 months. It's just kind of, it doesn't mean that's the sweet spot, but that's something we should stay within. It also thinking about May, that May to September, things typically change. Well, in the past, things changed then. So that would also be something in my mind as a target date to make sure that we were demobilizing by the time we got to May. It's just kind of a loose guideline right now.
Other questions, Mark?
Could you help
just paint a picture of what they're talking about? Is it like parklets in a parking lot, or is it a big giant tent like at Harvest Fest, or what?
I think we were, you know, what I'm envisioning is more like, say, a business not unlike New York City Subs and Crush Cidery. They have a plastic tent that takes up about 3 or 4 spaces out in front of their facility now. It's anchored into the parking lot. It's temporary in nature. I don't think we have any circus tent users size. I don't believe a user like Rosauer's or, you know, something of that magnitude, what we were looking at. I also don't think we have any food and beverage industries that are businesses that are of that magnitude either. So I think we're definitely looking for a isolated existing parking lot use.
Would it be limited to current brick and mortar people moving outside, or does it open the door for new hot dog people that come in to the town?
Well, that we technically seating and tables are not allowed for some of your transient merchants, such as your food carts, and we would have to deal with that in a different way. So I don't see this as opening the door to new businesses or transient merchants in itself. This would be, and we could say, you know, we could absolutely put that to brick and, you know, make it explicit. It's for existing brick and mortar businesses, existing establishments.
That just as a gut reaction, I like both what you're working on to make it real and to encourage them to find ways to survive. And then, you know, the limitation to existing brick and mortar seems to make sense to me right this second. So thanks.
I like that idea of existing brick and mortar, because this is to try and keep the existing brick and mortar in business. I mean, that's the reason for it. It's not to encourage additional competition. It's to keep our current businesses thriving, or, you know, hanging on by a shoestring, or whatever they're needing to do to get through the winter.
Okay. Well, if that's kind of the shared council sentiment, I'd probably have that moving rather quick and try to make this count quickly. Again, trying to be responsive as best we can to some pretty serious circumstances for these folks. So,
yeah, there's a motion.
Mayor, I was just going to jump in and say I did attend the meeting, and I thought Dustin and Will did a great job, as always. So they were very helpful for all the people there. I move to authorize staff to proceed with a temporary permitting program for food and beverage uses on private property.
We have a motion.
I'll second.
Jessica's made the motion, and Megan has seconded the motion. Additional discussion?
Can I just very quickly add a question? So I'm absolutely in full favor of this, and I commend staff for this. Just sort of in a way for us to contribute to the resiliency of our business community. We're talking here about private property. Are we also looking at public property options? And I'm not an expert by any means, but you know, the sidewalks come to mind as a possibility. There might be 5 reasons why that's a bad idea, but I guess just by way of point of discussion, I'm warm to both private and public ways of allowing our local businesses to remain resilient in this difficult time.
We hadn't contemplated it was going to be public like sidewalks.
I think in our last meeting, Mayor, we have a laundry list of things that we're going to go through. The use of the public right of way next year is going to be one of them. And again, the parklet is kind of a public right of way question. We are going to handle that as kind of a separate matter. But it's good to know, you know, any advance notice and sentiment, we will take that. This one is really aimed and kind of targeted to private property right now. But we definitely see that role and those needs to have that conversation about the use of public property. And the businesses want to know, especially those users of the parklets, they want to know as soon as possible what does 2021 look like in their options next year. So we'll be working on that as well.
All right. Roll call vote. Jessica?
Aye.
Megan?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Gladys?
Aye.
Tim?
Aye.
Eric?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. All right.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Dustin. Organizational updates. Workshop for Rand Road Development. I don't know if that'd be you, Rachel.
I'll take that one, Mayor. Thank you. Mayor McBride, councilors, we would like to schedule a special workshop sometime in December to discuss Rand Road and the high level goals that you have for the development. We've gotten some questions from our development consultant and thought that we would have spend 45 minutes or an hour with council to hear your kind of high level goals for the project. We do have a very full agenda on the 14th, so we hesitate to do this during a regular council meeting. One, because we don't want to be time constrained, and two, the agenda is very full. And as the next item said, we are canceling. We typically cancel the December 28th meeting. So if you're amenable to it, we'd hope to schedule a special workshop at a time that's convenient for you, and a public workshop, obviously. And I'd have Jen get in touch with you to figure out the best time for that.
She'll send out some possibilities in a doodle poll or something like that.
Yep, we'll do that. Thank you very much. Okay. And again, number two, just a reminder that the December 28th meeting will be canceled. And then, Mayor, we did, and I'll ask Dustin to come back on, added an item to appoint a planning commission, appoint a counselor to the planning commission selection. And I'll let Dustin take it from there.
Thank you, Rachel. Again, this is follow-up to our discussion that we had regarding the selection process. As directed by council, we have started collecting applications. Those applications, your upcoming vacancy and commission expired positions closes on December 1st. We'd like to get right into a possible selection process to allow if any overlap between old members and new members for some continuity. And as a part of that process, in the past, we've had the mayor, a council rep, and a staff rep do some interviews. So we do see opportunity on December 2nd to schedule this as one possible date. But what we do need is council to elect their representative in this process, or choose, or by process of elimination, we're looking for you all to volunteer. And so if you could do that, Jen, Gray, and I would help set up the meeting time and place and orchestrate interviews and scoring, which would then later come back to the entire council at large for action and appointment.
So Dustin, were you saying potentially that we would have the meeting to do the interviews on the 2nd?
It's a potential.
Okay, all right.
Yeah,
is that like during work hours kind of thing?
We would make time. But it's one potential day. We just want to make sure that we don't allow this to linger on and we see an opportunity.
Does anyone have a burning desire? I'm mayor. I'm going. I'll be there. So.
I would volunteer to do it, but I do have a workshop that I'm facilitating on December 2nd. So that day is out for me.
I think if we have willing volunteers, we'd be happy to accommodate.
I nominate Councillor Cunahan.
I'll second nomination.
We have a nomination.
I gladly accept your nominations.
Jessica nominated, Mark seconded, and Tim accepted the nomination. So let's vote. Jessica?
Aye.
Megan?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Vadas?
Aye.
Eric?
Aye.
I'm going to vote yes. What do you think, Tim?
Aye.
All right. Unanimous. Great. Thanks, Tim. We'll figure out.
Let me know, Dustin.
We will schedule something with you. Thank you for volunteering.
Okay. Yeah. I've got a couple things on my schedule already around the first and the second, or actually the second, third, and fourth. So I've got some hours that are open, but I'm just going to have to work around it a bit. So we'll figure it out. Great. So do we have several people that have applied now or not?
Oh, we do.
We do. Okay, great. Wonderful. Oh. Yeah, I don't need to know who they were. I just wonder if we had any applicants yet. But we do.
We do.
Fantastic. All right. Bridge replacement. Public hearing notice flyer. So you guys saw in your packet the notification for the environmental impact statement. So that's a huge step for the possibility of a new bridge. So that has come out, and now they have their information online, and then they're going to do a Zoom meeting, and that is going to be December 3rd at 5:30, and you can submit comments, or you can, you know, go to that meeting, and, you know, one of the next big steps of getting a new bridge. So we're happy about that. I don't think I have anything else on the bridge right now. Letter of support for regional transportation system. And that was also in the packet. And that is the Columbia Gorge Tourism Alliance. And they're working with Mid-Columbia Economic Development District and Columbia Area Transit to put in a application to ODOT for some funding for this. So this is just, you know, saying, yes, we think, you know, you should give them money. So if you guys are all head nodding that's a good thing to suggest to ODOT, I'll go ahead and we'll get that letter out.
So it's a letter in to the side of the one that's in the packet versus being a signatory to the one that's in the packet?
Say that again, Mark. It's what?
It's our own letter that.
No, it's just along with this. It's just being part of this letter.
Okay, so we'll get our logo down at the bottom.
Yes, we'll be added on. Yep. All right. I saw all head nods for the audience that can't see us. That's just on the phone. Everyone agrees that we should put our name on this letter.
And Mayor, I think some of those grant applications are ones that, you know, I submitted for my organization, but I don't think it's a conflict for this. I mean, you don't need my vote anyway, but for the city to sign a letter of support for my grant application.
Okay. The city isn't receiving this money, and McKed is not receiving the money, correct?
McKed would be receiving some of the money, yes.
They would be, okay. Might be good in that case.
Okay. I'm abstaining.
You better, okay, great. Jessica's abstaining. Let's just do a roll call vote in that case, just so there won't be any confusion for anyone listening. In favor of adding our name of support to this letter, Megan?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Eric?
Aye.
Gladys?
Aye.
Jessica?
Abstaining.
And the chair votes yes. All right. Great. I think the only, just a couple other things I have for council call. I was on a League of Oregon Cities call this morning. I don't know, was anyone else on that this morning? No. They were talking about draft rules that will go into effect after the freeze in another week. And it was really, they're going to be figuring out the metrics for numbers of positive cases and doing it a little bit differently than they've been doing it. And I can't explain to you exactly how they're doing it, but it's going to be a little bit different than it was before. There's 19 counties that are going to be basically, it looks like, if nothing has changed after the freeze, they're going to be still in a freeze state, exactly like what we're in right now. Because it doesn't look like they're going to go back to the, you're in phase one, phase two, phase three. It's going to be, you're going to be low risk, mid risk, high risk, and extreme risk. And there's 19 counties that are in extreme risk right now. And those counties are going to
be one of them.
No, we are not going to be one of those. Right. Well, if you look at the metrics from last week for us, now in another week, I don't know what our metrics are going to be, because I believe we have, as of two or three days ago, we have 41 cases in Hood River County. So, and I think it's about double what it was a week or 10 days before. So I don't really know exactly where we will end up in another week. But the chart I saw was much easier to understand than what the way we've been doing it, the phase one, phase two, phase three kind of thing. So, you know, hopefully in another week or less than a week that they'll actually, this thing won't be in draft form, and then they'll be able to release it to the public. But it did look much easier for anyone to understand where we would be depending on the metrics and what the metrics mean. So I think it's definitely better than what they were doing previously. Let me see here. Oh, I was on Radio Tierra last weekend? I think it seems like the days are going by so fast. And Nubia did an interview with Lorena, and we had some technical difficulties, but it went all right. And I explained, you know, what the city's doing. I explained about our survey, and that we have it in Spanish and English. We have it in paper form or online. And, you know, kind of just the general things that we do, where people can call to Mid-Columbia Community Action. And, you know, the city gave money to them to help people with utility bills. So we talked about COVID. We talked about, you know, what the city's business is. What do we do? And it was a great conversation, probably on for about an hour. And I am either going to be on in December, or maybe Chief Holstein might be on in December. So we'll get that figured out. But we kind of have a standing slot once a month to do an interview on Radio Tierra. So they were happy to have us on there. And then I also gave a pitch on the radio, on the other radio station this morning, to remind people to fill out the survey for our city work plan and where they could find that. And I talked about that this morning on the radio too. So that's all I've got. Let's see, Jessica.
Thank you, Mayor. I saw a different presentation of that COVID opening data too. And so I think they're gonna release it maybe on Wednesday for the public.
Oh, wow, that soon.
Mm-hmm. But it won't. Yeah. There was a visitor advisory council meeting. So to report out on that, and Rachel was there as well. Most of the discussion was talking about updating their bylaws, and, you know, just reviewing how they're doing with the transition. And there was some good conversation about, so the bylaws talked about who's on the board and ex officio, and they had originally struck out where they named who was ex officio members, and ended up, I think, where they said that they would, you know, and are reappointed, or they said that they would invite us to appoint our own person, I think is where it got left. Rachel, yeah, okay. So, but I think that there's some room for clarification, and it still is, it was kind of confusing, you know, is it, is who's on that for the city? So I think we've got some more clarity that we can bring to the discussion. And that's it for me. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Eric?
Thank you, Mayor. I'll just mention briefly, as I hinted at right before we went on the air here on our meeting today, right before this meeting, the ODOT ACT meeting was meeting to formalize its letter of recommendation to the ACT, the Oregon Transportation Commission, all these acronyms. Basically, the kind of the broad public body is going to make a suggestion to the Oregon Transportation Committee about how we can improve the STIP funding for the next cycle, which I think is 24 to 27, so it's quite a number of years out. And as I joked around, I told the chair, his name is Roy Rogers, that's his real name, Roy Rogers. There's a Jimmy Stewart in Hood River, by the way, a good friend of mine. I've got to introduce Jimmy Stewart to Roy Rogers. But Roy Rogers gave me the floor because I said I had to leave early, and my presence may infect the quorum. So I've never actually addressed this body of, it's a really large committee, this ODOT committee. There's, you know, 50 members or something. It's a big table, maybe not quite that many, but a big group. Anyway, the point of the story is that the letter that was being finalized, and I gave my little speech to help further this, but the letter that was being discussed did seem to indicate a recommendation to the Oregon Transportation Commission to try to look at how the funding works. Because there was five or six points of criticism, but one of them is that the rural areas are being hard hit. So that messaging seems to be getting through, and hopefully the structure will be changing to facilitate larger dollars. You may remember my pie chart with the 1% or less coming to Hood River County. So that's been our kind of message consistently for a year at least on this. And the net result of that is a line and a letter going to the Oregon Transportation Committee. So the bureaucracy moves slowly, but that is in the letter, and I'm pleased with that. And that reminds me, Mark, I need to get back to you about your question about this pot of money, which is just one of many pots of money. I'll follow up with you separately, Mark. You had asked that question, but maybe that's more information than you wanted, but we've made at least a data point here trying to support the more rural areas in this group, which when I say more rural, it's really just Hood River County, because we're part of the Portland metro area. So more dollars of Hood River County is the only real rural area, maybe parts of Clackamas, that are not as well funded in STIP as they used to be with the discretionary dollars there. If that makes any sense at all.
Less money for rural areas, and that's us.
That's right, and it's in the letter to try to improve that. Because this group, the is just an advisory committee to, it's non-binding. Our vote doesn't really matter for any legal thing other than to make recommendations and to give input to the Oregon Transportation Committee, which is a more substantial committee with power over how ODOT budgeting works.
Thank you, Eric.
So there's your wonky discussion for the evening.
Thank you. Gladys?
Thank you, Mayor. As you are all aware, the governor did issue out a 2-week freeze for COVID. What I really want to highlight is the limiting social get-togethers, indoor and outdoors, to no more than 6 people or the equivalence of 2 households. You know, folks, you hear me every meeting talking about the importance of washing your hands and wearing your mask and how very easily spreadable COVID really is. What I haven't talked about is, you know, that I myself am a frontline worker, right? I have a whole team that we're all frontline workers. And folks, we've been doing this for months and months, responding to COVID, testing for COVID, doing outreach. And it's a lot of work. It's hard work. It's heartbreaking work because we are getting to connect with some of those folks who are most vulnerable and who are being hit the hardest. I want to mention that here in Hood River, we have our local hospital, which is great. That local hospital only has 4 ICU beds. So if you are someone who needs to be on a ventilator, you're most likely going to have to get sent out to Portland. And that's where you're going to find yourself in a whole world of trouble, because it's in the Portland metro areas where they're running out of ICU beds. So if you get really sick with COVID, the chances of you having access to care, they become a little less and less as folks are getting together and potentially infected. So I just really want to caution us all during this time when we're normally getting together with our families for holidays, that we really remember the importance of limiting those gatherings right now, because we all have to make the sacrifice, because again, there are frontline workers that are responding to the need and they are burnt out. They are tired, and the system that we have set up right now does not support more and more folks becoming infected. And so I'm concerned for us all. Please do your part on limiting your gatherings for now. And if you really, really have to get together, please wear your mask. Please, please wear your mask.
Thank you, Gladys. Megan?
Yeah, basically echoing Gladys. I listened to the county meeting last week, and their COVID update from the county health department was fairly depressing. They're losing staff. They don't have the capacity to do the full contract tracing they should be doing. The number of cases is growing, our positivity rate is growing. We're not in a good situation, clearly nationwide, statewide, and locally, we're not in a good situation. And so I'm going to definitely echo the advice that's been given by a lot of folks of don't gather for Thanksgiving unless it's just with folks already in your household. Because a lot of the spread is from social get-togethers. And I know that's really hard for everyone, but it needs to. It's really important that we try to limit spread and reduce the growth of this disease. So thank you all.
Thanks, Megan. Tim?
Thanks, Mayor. Really not much of anything other than to say that we are coming up on Thanksgiving, and I'm thankful to live in this community. And I'm thankful for my friends and family, and I'm thankful for all of you. So happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Tim. Appreciate that sentiment. Mark?
Yeah, I also, sort of like Tim, I wanted to wish everyone, all of you guys, a happy Thanksgiving and with your families, and be safe. It's a good thing I don't like my kids, so they can't come over anyway. So, yeah, it's hard, but we'll get through it. We have to keep treating it seriously. I agree with everything that you guys have said. I want to thank Rachel for organizing the series of meetings we had about goal setting, and I want to see everyone else's pictures and poems at some point, but not today. I don't really have anything else. So be good. So.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Good discussions, good in-depth discussions on a lot of things as we're continuing on. We have a big meeting next time, and another meeting coming up in between that Jen will get to us on to discuss Rand Road. So thank you, everyone. Have a good holiday, however that looks. Talk to you shortly. Bye.
Thank you, counselors.
We're adjourned.